Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. I have most of my voice back right now. Thanks again to Emily Johnson from the Over the Rhine Chamber of Commerce, Dersha Soot from Downtown Cincinnati, Inc., and Donna Kramer from Main Strasse Village Association, sharing a small slice of all the holiday happenings in and around downtown Cincinnati. Full details on all that you heard about today and stuff we didn't cover, available at wvxu.org. In this age of distracting technology and a flood of media assaulting the senses, people can live next door to each other and rarely see or speak with their neighbors. A new trend's trying to change that. Joining me on the phone from her home in Oregon right now is Maggie Stuckey, author of the new book, Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition, Maggie. I think I need some of that soup right now.
It's my pleasure to be here.
I think some of that soup would be very soothing on my throat.
I think you need some, yeah.
Well, you know, breaking bread.
Let me send you some chicken noodle real quick.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Breaking bread with neighbors is deeply rooted in the American tradition. But, you know, it's as I mentioned, a tradition that's suffering, even just among family members in a single household. Do you see that happening too, Maggie?
Absolutely. We all know that, especially when kids get to the point where they start doing sports and after-school activities. It's rare anymore that family members sit down and have a meal together. And so extending that outward a little bit, it's not at all surprising then that people live in a neighborhood where they don't know their neighbors. They may not even know their name. But what I found, Mark, when talking to people around the country when I was researching this book is that even though that's the case, people don't really like living that way. There's this kind of unspoken yearning to live in a neighborhood that is closer to a real community where neighbors do know each other and watch out for each other and help each other and know when good things and bad things are happening and have fun together. People want to live that way, but they don't quite know how to make it happen. I found all these neighborhoods who have the same feeling. And amazingly enough, this really amazes me, they hit upon the same solution, which is, let's make a big pot of soup and invite everybody in the neighborhood. That's a key. You got to invite everybody and watch what happens. And what happens is absolutely amazing. I've seen it myself. So I can tell you firsthand that a very urban neighborhood in a pretty big city, here where I live in Portland, becomes a really close community that people describe as being kind of like a small town. Right in the middle of this big city, they've created a small town.
Oh, it's amazing. The stories that I read in your book, Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup, that when talking how it touches all age groups, it's not just looking for lonely seniors or, you know, just to people looking for companionship. It benefits kids. It really benefits everyone.
And especially the children. This is one of the things that touches me most when I talk to these groups. And by the way, it was very easy. I almost surprised myself how easy it was to find neighborhoods, and they are literally all across the country, and they're almost all in big cities, which is interesting in itself, because normally we think of people who live in big cities as wanting to be kind of closed in to themselves, but in fact they want the opposite. But almost all of them talk with great eloquence about how important their soup night is to the children in their neighborhood. It's important to the children and also to the parents because they know when the neighbors get to know each other, the kids can be out in the neighborhood, in their front yards, running back and forth, and they're safe. They don't have to be afraid, and the parents don't have to be afraid.
Maggie Stuckey discussing Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup. Her new book shares the stories of soup nights around the country and more than 90 soup recipes. Do you participate in a soup night in your community? What are your experiences? What are some of your favorite recipes? You can call us 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Comment on Facebook or tweet us, too. And I'm sorry, Maggie, but yes, you do participate in a soup night right there in Portland. How did you discover it?
Well, the soup night that I write most about and that I'm most familiar with actually happens on the block where my brother lives here in Portland with his family. And it's getting to know those people and watching their event month after month that started me thinking about this whole thing. And in particular, the one moment that seemed to me like a light bulb went off over my head was I was standing on my brother's, because one of their traditions is that whoever is the host that month makes the soup but doesn't do anything else, including doesn't have to be burdened with washing dishes afterwards. So their tradition is that everybody comes to the house carrying their own soup bowl and spoon. So the first time I saw this, I was standing on my brother's front porch, and I watched all the people, and they kind of leave the house at the same time because nobody wants to be late. And they're all kind of parading down the sidewalk in the late afternoon carrying an empty soup bowl. It's the most charming sight, and I thought to myself, something really special is happening here. I've got to learn more about it.
Well, your description of those soup nights there in Portland are just precious. As you talk about the people interacting and talking and meeting neighbors, they may have been lived next door to for quite a few years. I was curious, though, how you learned about other soup nights in other places. Where and when did you learn how this all began? And I was surprised as I read your book that in many places this has been going on for some time.
Going on for 20 years. Well, how I found out about it is the magic of Google. I didn't find any in Cincinnati. I bet there are some. I just didn't find them. And I'd love to hear about it later on if some of your listeners call in. And then some people pass me on to others that they know about. It frequently happens this way. Somebody participates in a soup group in their hometown, and then they move to another city or even another state. And they enjoyed the process so much that they started a soup night in their new neighborhood as a way to get to know their neighbors and introduce themselves among the neighborhood. And so it kind of it has its own perpetual life, you know. It kind of expands by itself.
Yes. Very organic and very natural as it begins to grow out. Well, and this is not, you mentioned that the host of the soup night in the neighborhood you talk about in the book doesn't have to do anything except make the soup, doesn't have to clean up or anything. And that does relieve a lot of stress when it comes, you know, a lot of people would freak out if they say, oh, the whole neighborhood's coming over for dinner.
Yeah. The other rule is you don't have to clean up afterwards. You also don't have to clean up beforehand. There's none of this scurrying around to make sure the house looks perfect, because that's really not the point. And making a large pot of soup, first of all, making soup is just about the easiest thing there is. I don't want anybody to be intimidated. The recipes in the book are scaled to serve six because I want people to be able to use it in at home for their family. But almost all of them have notations on how to expand it to feed a larger crowd. So that's the wonderful thing about soup is you it's infinitely expandable. You know, you put a few more noodles in, a little bit more chicken stock, and suddenly you've got enough for twice as many people as you plan. The other thing that makes it easy, and this is I keep wanting to stress this because I don't want people to think they're embarking on something hard. The other thing that's easy is almost all soups are better the second day, so you can make quite a many of the recipes ahead of time, or you can make them, you can do three-quarters of the work ahead of time. You can even make it a month ahead of time and freeze it. So on the day of, you're not sweating over, you know, a big soup kettle in the kitchen, because that's not the point either. The point is for you to have an opportunity to interact with the neighbors and check on what everybody's up to.
And you try to cover all the bases. I mean, early on in the book, you mentioned that for soup night, you make one soup that may have meat in it, but you also have a vegetarian option.
Yes. You know, more and more people prefer to eat that way, and it's just a measure of good hospitality to make sure that all your guests have something that they can enjoy. The wonderful thing about soup is almost all soup recipes can be converted for vegetarians simply by measure of using vegetarian stock rather than chicken stock, for example, leaving out the bacon, and all the recipes in the book, I made notations about that too, as you know what you'd have to do to make it work for vegetarians. And the other thing is, so many of the foods that we know are good for us, absolutely heart healthy, they do well in soups. All the grains, all the beans, all the vegetables. It's a great way to get your kids to eat some vegetables and not complain about it. You've got to sneak them in there.
That's right.
Soup is, in addition to its many other virtues, that it's easy to make, that it's nutritious, that it's inexpensive. It's about the least expensive way you can feed a large group of people is a giant pot of, let's say, split pea soup. But it's also very, very healthy.
Well, if you wanted to start a soup night or a soup group and really wanted to do it, but if someone doesn't really know their neighbors, how do you start? How do you, you know, make those invitations?
Yeah, right. Well, the first thing that people would need to do is kind of think in their own mind how they envision the group, what the population of the group is. It could be your whole block, or it could be everybody in your Sunday school class, or everybody who's a parent whose kids are in the same Boy Scout troop as your kids. But the key thing is, if you really want this to work in the magical way that it can work, the key thing is to make sure you include everybody, not just the people you already know and not just the people you think you might like, but everybody. And then particularly if it's a neighborhood with sidewalks and, you know, a regular kind of urban laid-out block, it's very helpful to recruit one other person to go with you, and maybe if that person knows some of the people you don't know, so the two of you as partners can kind of visit every home, and you've prepared a little flyer that very, very simple, doesn't have to be anything fancy, that just describes what you're doing, and a time and a date. Sunday evening seems to work well for most people, kind of early in the evening. I talked to one woman about what happened when she decided to start hers, and she said, well, I went and I knocked on every door until I found somebody at home, and I never had, not one person said to me, go away. Most people said, what a lovely idea, thank you so much, and most of them came. And once people come and realize that even the folks who they might not normally gravitate towards because their lives are very different, when they have this, the thing is, Mark, when people sit down at a table and share a meal together, something good is bound to happen. And when what they're eating is soup, it's even more so, more of that sort of warm, nourishing, nurturing, homey kind of feeling that soup brings. I mean, I was joking about chicken noodle soup because I don't think I can get it to you this morning, but all of us remember when we were kids and we were sick and Mom brought soup up, we instantly felt better. Soup makes you feel better in all kinds of ways.
Maggie Stuckey is the author of Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup, that not only has recipes for soups, but also recipes for sides, another important part of Soup Night. It's available where books are sold, and it has a chapter devoted to starting your own soup night, how to do it, tips and tricks and tonics. And Maggie, I was noticing that you hit up some of the people who have been longtime soup nighters and asked their advice about the best way to run a soup night.
Yes. When I was writing their stories after interviewing them, they often talked about how they went about it, so that's kind of an inherent part of their story. And then I pulled out all the best ideas and organized them into kind of this final short chapter at the end. And many of them had already kind of plotted out one family has a checklist, and it's absolutely things that you might forget, like move the dog's water dish so nobody steps in it, that kind of thing. And several others had worked out a plan of how to manage this. And I was happy that they gave me permission to include those because it helps people see that it's really not complicated.
Well, it also looks like it's quite popular because I've been noticing as I was reading the book how Some of these soup nights have been going on for quite some time. Yeah. One in Houston, Texas, they've been going since 1998, and there was a one. I'm trying to remember. It escapes me right now. One lady who had to put the soup night on hiatus because it was getting a little too big.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I guess that's a good problem to have. I believe that they're going to start up again because she loved it so much. That's the thing that just so touched me when I was talking to these folks, Mark. They are so proud of what they've accomplished. They love talking about it. They love showing it off when they have relatives visiting. Nobody ever wants to miss it. If somebody invites them out on a soup night, they say, sorry, we're going to soup night and we never miss it. For one thing, our kids won't let us. The kids say, we have to go. So we go.
Well, in the soup recipes, you have collected these from near and far and broken up into seasons. And it looks like, for the most part, at least there in Portland, Oregon, you tend to stay to the cooler weather months.
Yeah, I mean, people do tend to think of soup as being a cold weather thing, although there are summertime soups, maybe kind of a new idea to some people, but there's a lot of things you can do with cold soups in the summer. I should give credit where it's due. Most of the recipes are not original with me. When I talked to all these folks at the soup nighters around the country, I invited them to send me their favorite soup recipes. And don't you know they sent me their very best recipes. So most of what's in the book, both the soups and the desserts and the salads and the bread, came from these people who participate in these soup night groups. And because they are all around the country, they reflect regional cuisine and regional ingredients, which I think is really fun for people who like to kind of travel around the country by eating different foods from different parts of the country.
Well, I have to say that I shared the book with my favorite soup chef, and she had about, well, easily half the recipes in the book, Mark, to check them out. And they really do vary. I mean, I love this one, Havana Banana Black Bean Soup, which has a Latin American touch with some bananas in it as it goes along. And I also learned about had a plethora of butternut squash in the garden and was wondering what to do. And you have a great acorn butternut squash soup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the hardest thing about the butternut squash a lot of times is trying to get the skin off, but you suggest just roasting it in the oven and then when it gets soft enough to be able to scoop right out.
Right. You cook it like a giant baked potato, you know. It takes a little longer, but it's the same principle.
Oh, and it worked perfect. I mean, I made
good,
the squash soup, and it was tasty. So
yeah.
But out of all these, you know, you have more than 90 soups in your book.
99.
Soup night. So any that you would recommend for a first-timer trying a soup night, something that will appeal to many folks, or do you stick to it? It's best to have two pots of soup there.
Well, any of the chicken noodle soups that if they're going to be children there, there's a recipe for a cheeseburger soup, and you know we know kids will love that. One of the soup groups that meets once a year, they always do a potato cheese soup. I mean, everything else is different from year to year, but they always do that one because they know that kids will enjoy it. Anything that's familiar to kids, like any version of chicken noodles. I myself am very fond of a soup called African peanut soup, which you can make with a vegetarian version, and it's every bit as delicious as the one that you make with chicken. And one of the nice things about it is it's made from ingredients that you're almost certain to have on hand anyway. Which is another great thing about soup, is that it's very, very forgiving. If you're working on a recipe and it calls for something you don't have, you can either leave it out or switch out something else, and it'll still be great. That's the magic of soup. You can just put just about anything in a soup pot, and it's going to be wonderful.
Well, I love your biography on the back where you say you divide your time between Portland, Oregon, and the tiny coastal town of Ocean Park, both of them famous for blustery, rainy weather, perfect for soup. So what soup do you turn to the most, Maggie?
the one I just mentioned, the African peanut, because it's made with rice, canned tomatoes, chicken stock, or vegetables. Then you add a big spoonful of peanut butter, which contributes protein for the vegetarian version. But more than that, this contributes this wonderful taste level that you can't quite put your fingers on. And then so people say, well, what is this? What am I eating? And I say, peanut butter. And they say, really? Because when you say it's got peanut butter, people tend to think of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It's not sweet at all. It's nice and savory, a bit salty, and it just adds this kind of depth of flavor. It's really wonderful. These are all things you've got in your cupboard anyway.
Well, you know, you tell stories of soup nights all around the country, and I was wondering, and you know, I was touched by many of the stories of the potters who create their own empty bowls, a movement called The Empty Bowls. The young man who moved to a big city and started a soup night just so he could meet people. But which story in your new book, Soup Night, touched you the most? I mean, what really tugged at your heartstrings, Maggie?
Well, all the ones where the people talk about the children and how much it means to the children, and there's half a dozen of which that kind of floats to the surface is the thing that everybody comments on. You mentioned the empty bowls, which is another thing that attracts me greatly. Empty bowls is actually a national movement that is a little bit different in every town where they hold it. It has a double goal of addressing hunger in their community and also appreciation of arts education. And what happens is local potters make these bowls, or, which is even better, go to local schools and teach kids how to make bowls. And then local restaurants donate soup and bread, and people come and they buy an empty bowl for $5 and have a bowl of soup, and then they can take the bowl home at the end of the event. And I went to one in Ocean Park where there's this little tiny coastal town that you just mentioned. The first time I was there were five or six soups, wonderful, and they all smell wonderful. And I thought the idea was to have a tasting of each one. So I had some soup from one crock pot, and then I went to see if I could have another one. Somebody explained that the whole idea of that event is that a lot of times people who are in serious financial trouble or homeless, one bowl of soup and a piece of bread might be all they have to eat for a day. And the idea is for us to experience what that's like. So I went back into the table and sat down and started crying to think of that there are people who are that desperate for good food. And here we are in this country where we have so much, and surely we can do a better job of dealing with that problem.
Well, what kind of feedback have you received since Soup Night came out? I imagine there's a lot of folks like me who were like, this is a super idea. Why didn't I think of that? And why haven't I been doing that for so long?
Well, the feedback that pleases me the most is I thought I would always have to, because when you just pick up the book and thumb through it, it's obviously a cookbook. There are photographs of, you know, beautiful-looking soups, and the recipes are laid out like you would expect them to be. So I thought I would always have to say, yes, it is a cookbook, and I'm very proud of the recipes, but it's so much more than that. But I don't have to explain that at all. People immediately get it, that it's a cookbook plus. One woman said to me, it's a manual about community development disguised as a cookbook. So the feedback that means the most to me is that people immediately get the part of the idea that means the most to me, as you did, which is that it's really all about building a community and using food to do it. Something human beings have been doing for thousands of years, by the way. There's nothing new about this.
No, there isn't, but just need a little reminder, and you provide a fantastic reminder here with your new book. And thank you for being on Cincinnati Edition, Maggie.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Soup Night, recipes for creating community around a pot of soup. recipes and help in starting your own soup group from author Maggie Stuckey. You can find Soup Night where books are sold and by looking on WVXU.org. It has plenty of recipes for soups and sides and advice about starting your own soup group. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, now on Monday through Friday at 1 o'clock here on 91.7 WVXU. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. Technical director for today's show was Bruce Ellis. Producer was Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds. You can find archives and links for Cincinnati Edition stories at WVXU.org. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening and putting up the torture of my voice. The debut of NPR's Here and Now, on the way next.